Well, we are at Acts chapter 22, and now from here on out, we'll see Paul starting today. He gives the first of his six defenses of who he is and what he hasn't done wrong. And today, you know, we're picking up today where we left off last week, where he was standing on the stairs. And he was going to address the Jewish crowd. So that's kind of where we are. But basically, this whole thing, if you look at it, you know, what do we, it's kind of a narrative. You know, we do not have a lot of theology that comes out of it. But one thing we do have that comes out of it that pertains to all of us still today, and is this: what is your testimony? You know what a testimony is, right? I'm not talking about just a legal testimony. Legal testimony is when you declare a truth about something in which something is being dealt with in a law case. From a spiritual standpoint, a testimony is, it's really not about your life. It's what Jesus has done in your life. A lot of people get that all messed up, and they talk about themselves and more than they do about Jesus. And you'll see what Paul does here. He's wise. And if you want to see a pattern of how to put your testimony together, he just gave it to us today. From a Jewish perspective, how you would deal with it, from an ancient perspective, you would look at this and this and this and this, and that's exactly what he does, is he lays out his testimony. That's what he does. He just gives his testimony before the Jewish crowd. You remember Ananias had said, he's going to stand before this group and this group and this group and this group. He's going to be before the Jewish people, and then he's going to be before the kings, and then he's going to be before this and this. So this one is the first one of those that the prophet is, that the prophecy about him is actually coming to pass in chapter 22. C.S. Lewis, I don't know if any of you ever read his book, Surprised by Joy. It's a great book. In it, he talks about all kind of things in his life. I'm going to just quote a part of it, just what he says about it. He says, he speaks frankly of his mother's death, about study and snobbery at Oxford, where he went to school, about World War I, where he served, his father's death, his rediscovery of himself, who he was. And at last, his room at Oxford in 1929, he wrote, "I gave in." Remember, he was an atheist. Then he became an agnostic. Agnostic says you really don't know if God exists or not. Atheism just says, well, absolutely there is no God. But he's moved from atheism to agnosticism, where he says, you know, I'm not really sure. Then he says this: "I gave in and admitted that God was God and knelt and prayed. Perhaps that night, the most dejected and reluctant convert in England." He said the prodigal at least walked home on his own feet. That's a testimony. That's what that is. That's what Paul's doing. You know, when's the last time you gave your testimony? You don't have to give it at church. Do you have a testimony? That's it. Paul has a testimony. And if you do not have a testimony, you're probably not saved. Because a testimony is just a quick recap of what God did in your life to bring you to your, bring you to himself, and that you trust him. You ought to be able to sit down and write that out on a piece of paper if you've never done it before. You know, they made us do it a long, 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 long time ago. They said, you need to know that. We had to do it in a class. You need to sit down in concisely something that you could share with someone in 3 minutes. You got to hone it. Your testimony. What has God done for you? That's the basic. It's not just about you. It's what God has done in you, and that's what Paul talks about. You know, everybody that holds a religious position, so-called, doesn't mean they're spiritual. Isn't that right? Who was Jesus' greatest adversaries? Religious people. Who was Paul's greatest adversaries? Religious people, the Jews. It was Jesus and, you know, we're always going back and watching scenes from The Chosen. And boy, they're just as exciting every time you watch them. And we watched the one last night again where Jesus goes to the temple and hears Jesse, who they name as the guy at the pool. You remember that one? And after they're leaving, you know, the Pharisees got so mad because he healed him. And he picked up his mat and he's walking with it. And Matthew asked Jesus after they were out of the temple. He says, You know, all you had to do was wait 30 minutes and it would not have been a problem. Why did you do it? You know what Jesus said? Sometimes you just have to stir things up. And boy, he did. But it always, a lot of times, our greatest adversaries are religious people. Every time I've ever had trouble in 20, I don't know how many years now, 28 years in ministry, you know who it's always been? Religious people. I didn't say saved people. I said religious people. Well, this deacon who was not every deacon is this way. I've known some who were kind of smug and, you know, thought they were real religious, even though they had the spiritual savvy of a donkey. After being around them 45 years, you understand that, all right? And he was teaching this class of boys and kind of pompous, you know, thinks he's somebody, and these younger boys. He asked a question. He said, "Why do you think people call me a Christian?" And after a little bit of break, nobody said anything. One little boy said, "Well, maybe it's because they don't know you." Maybe why? What is your testimony? You know, that's it. That's the whole issue. What is your testimony? That's what we're going to look at today. Basically, what Paul does is he shares his testimony, and God's using it, absolutely. Now, are we working? Yes. Let's pick it up in 22. And again, I'm just taking a few verses because it's long and it's a narrative. We can't read them all right? He says, "Brothers," remember, he's standing on the steps. He's asked the commander in Greek. He said, "Can I speak to the crowd?" Remember that from last week? And the man was amazed that he could speak Greek, number one. He said, "Whoa, man, I'm somebody." He basically says, you know, "I'm from Tarsus, a not-so-insignificant city." And then he says, "Can I speak to the crowd?" And he said, "Yeah." So he says, "Brothers and fathers, hear ye the defense which I make known to you." And when they heard that he spoke to them in the Hebrew, in their own tongue, they absolutely, you know, as we said last week again, his pedigree was, he said, "I'm still one of the very few that could speak Hebrew." After the Hellenistic took over, a lot of the Jews no longer were taught to speak Hebrew anymore. They spoke Greek. That's why they translated the Old Testament in what we call the Septuagint into Greek, because the people couldn't even read and study Hebrew anymore. He said, "Oh, no, no, I still speak Hebrew. I'm one of them." Until the Hebrew language, they were more quiet. They said, "Well, God, he can speak to us. He's not just, he knows our language." He said, "I am a Jew born in Tarsus, Cilicia, but brought up in this city, at the feet of Gamaliel, instructed according to the strict manner of the law of our fathers." Now, look what he's doing. He's laying a platform him, because what have they accused him of? They're accusing him to be an apostate Jew. They said, "Oh, you're not Jewish anymore. You left our faith, and all you want to do is have these Gentiles come into the church, and you're trying to tear down our nationalism, and you're trying to put us, we won't be any different than anybody else. You've left the Jewish faith." So you have to keep that in mind. So the whole thing he's doing here, the way he lays out his testimony, is to remind them who he really is. "I studied at the feet of Gamaliel." You know what you find in the ancient writings? They said when Gamaliel, they looked at him as, you know, one of the finest rabbis ever. And a lot of them said whenever he died, the glory of the law disappeared. He was like one of the last ones that would uphold it. The Old Testament law, the Torah. "And according to the strict manner of the law of our fathers, being zealous for God, even as you are all this day." He said, "I was just like you. You were trying to kill me. What do you think I was doing? I was standing there whenever Stephen was killed. I was holding the coats. I was the one who took all those letters that I've got from the high priest." Evidently, he had some inside ability, even though he was well known. He said, "I'm just like y'all. You think you're the only ones wanting to kill somebody?" And he goes down through the whole thing when he lays it out. We won't read all those verses, but he goes right back to Stephen. Isn't it kind of ironic? The very same thing that Stephen was accused for and killed is the thing they're accusing Paul of. Isn't that crazy? Huh. "And I persecuted this way." That was what Christianity was known as in the early days. The way that really came out of Judaism, which was Jesus. "Unto the death, binding and delivered into prisons, both men and women," on the Damascus Road. That's what he was doing. He was going there to get letters. He was going there to get people and bring them back so they'd be executed. That's what his deal was. Also the high priest. What? He's in cahoots with the high priest. He's not just a nobody Jew. I mean, he's somebody. He said he's defending who he really is as a devout Jew. All those, and even now, he'll go on and he said, whenever I had this trance, I was in the temple whenever this happened. He said, you don't, somebody that goes to the trouble to go through the temple doesn't go to desecrate it. We'll come to that. And all the estate of the elders, from whom I also received letters to the brethren. This is where he's going to get the people killed. And journeyed to Damascus to bring them also that were there into Jerusalem in bonds to be punished. And it came to pass that as I made my journey and drew into Damascus about noon, suddenly there shone from heaven a great light around me. There's several tellings of his testimony in the book of Acts. And you notice a lot of people say, well, they're not the same. His audience is not the same. You know, when he's talking to Gentiles, they could give a rat ski cap who Ananias was. They don't care. So why would Paul put all that in there? You know, whenever you're talking to somebody, think about who you're talking to. You don't just say, well, I got this canned testimony and that's all I... No, you think about it. He says, whenever I gave my testimony back to those Gentiles, I didn't do it the same way, the main things, but I had to redo it a little bit. That's what he's saying. And drew into Damascus about noon, suddenly there shone from heaven a great light around about me, and I fell to the ground and heard a voice saying unto me, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? And I answered, who are you? Who are you, Lord? And he said, I'm Jesus of Nazareth, whom you're persecuting. Who is he persecuting? He's persecuting the church. Jesus says, you're persecuting me, the church. When people say, oh yeah, I love Jesus, but I don't really have to have anything to do with the church, their theology is all messed up. Jesus is the church. And the church is supposed to be Jesus. Jesus died for it, and his blood bought it. If it wasn't important, why would he start it? Now, there's a lot of messed up church setups. I grant you that. We watched a little short clip last night of it was talking about all this gender stuff, I forgot who did it, but they were interviewing all these mega church pastors about homosexuality and what they thought about it. You know, the only one that really stood up and said, clearly, this is what the deal is. Anybody know who it would have been? John MacArthur. All the rest of them were flip-flopping all over the place. Well, we don't really know what it says. Well, what are you even doing trying to talk to somebody? That's what one of them said. Well, Jesus didn't talk about the issues. He didn't ever tell anybody they were sinners. What? And people follow this kind of nonsense. I mean, it is... Okay, I'll get off my hobby horse. It's whacked. Andy Stanley was in the bunch. T.D. Jakes was in the bunch. Furtick was in the bunch. A couple of these other nutcases that just looking at him, you think, this guy can't be straight. And just listening to him just meant you say, okay, I see it. And then they come to John MacArthur, and he says, the Bible says it's sin. Are we supposed to love him? Yeah, but it's sin. That's what it is. You know, just don't have it. Jesus and Nazareth, whom you're persecuting. That's who I am. That's what's going on. Now, all of these, from now to the rest of the book is over, we'll see Paul giving his defense of who he is. You know, he starts here and he has to appeal and go a little bit farther. And in the earlier times, he wouldn't appeal to the Roman government, but you'll see as things get going, he's wise enough to say, you know, I don't have to do it over here, but I got to do it over here. And he moves from place to place and place to place, all right? At the time of his conversion, Paul told Ananias that Paul would be the witness before Gentiles. We've already seen him do that through the book of Acts. Kings and the people of Israel, which is absolutely what he's doing this day. And they're fulfilled here in this place. And we'll see the other ones fulfilled as we go through the rest of it. Ultimately, he would witness before Caesar himself. But the first one today is he's standing on the stairs and he's talking to the Jewish people, his own people. His main purpose in the defense was to establish he's not an apostate Jew. He's still a Jew that believes in the law. He's still a Jew that believes, but he just says it's not necessary for salvation. But he still believes in it because the Jews accused him of what? Of being apostate. He was no longer, he talked against the law, and he was not for God, and he was hurting their people, his own people. And he answered that charge by casting his light in a completely Jewish context. Why would he bring up Gamaliel? Why would he bring up Ananias, who was a devout Jew? Why would he bring up all those people? He's trying to remind those people who he is, where he's been. He was brought up, you know, a lot of people try to argue, well, he was raised in Tarsus, absolutely, and probably didn't go to Jerusalem until he was 13, where then he would start to be in manhood, and he would study under Gamaliel, which was still revered as one of the greatest rabbis ever lived, especially at that time, and that's who he was. It was a direct revelation from God that he did what he did. And he talks about all those things in a Jewish context. Why? Because that's who he's talking to. You know, so when you're trying to share your testimony, who are you talking to? It doesn't mean you lie about anything, but sometimes you fashion things that deal with that issue where they are, where they're coming from, more than just saying, well, I always just say this only. Well, Paul's wiser than that. We can be wiser than that. We need to know. The formal introduction, brothers and sisters, is exactly what Stephen did. If you go back to Acts chapter 6, when we're talking about that. Even the choice of the language emphasized his Jewishness to the crowd who was about to kill him. So he established his pedigree in a layout of a Greek formula of their heritage. Where you were born, where you were reared, what was your education? You know, we had that. Still have that, don't we? I don't think it's as prevalent as it used to be, but it used to be when I was in college in Dallas, I got to know a couple of guys real well. One of them was a Cajun guy, Ricky DeLatt. That's pretty Cajun, ain't it? And we get to talking about things, and they do the same thing out there. You know, when I grew up, if we were around people that we didn't know and they saw us, they'll say, who's your daddy? That's what they want to know. Where are you from? Where you stay? But they want to know that. They want to know, what does that mean? It means something. And if they knew your father, whether he was good or bad, it automatically reflected on how they were going to treat you. I don't know if that means anything anymore. It used to. Where you were born, how are you reared, how are you educated? You know, it was a big deal for a Jewish guy. He was born in Tarsus, brought up in Jerusalem. It's more likely that he went there when he got older. Only here does the New Testament refer to Paul's education under Gamaliel. Why? All these other times when he's just talking to Gentiles, they probably say, who is that? It doesn't really matter who that is. To the Jews, it mattered that he had been under one of the most respected rabbis and had learned under him. It meant something. His credentials, which would have certified his legitimacy when he started talking about Jewish stuff. Oh, this guy knows what he's talking about. Now, please understand, just because you have education don't mean you know anything. It doesn't mean you have any wisdom. You understand that, right? You can get to college and make all A's and come out just as dumb or dumber than you went in there. It does not guarantee one thing, all right? Just don't think that you're going to go to university and you're going to get this education, and if you don't learn how to apply some of the stuff you learned, you'll be worse off than you were. Why? Because you're going to pick up some stuff in university that you don't need, number one, especially in this day and time, because everything is so affected by all this craziness in the world. But learning to figure that out, that is part of it. Scholarship. The Jewish charges that Paul had violated both the law and the temple. Remember, he said, oh, you broke the temple law because you brought this Gentile in there. Were the same charges that they charged Stephen with. Isn't that amazing? That's right. Isn't that ironic? He showed his former zeal for Judaism. How? He had been a persecutor. I'm the one, surely, any Jew that had heard anything about that was going on, they absolutely heard that there was this Jew that was killing all these Christians because they were anti-God. You don't think they didn't know his name? I guarantee you, the word gets out. Oh, man, we got a great Jewish believer, and he's out there putting all this stuff to silence, even killing these people. I guarantee you. There would have been somebody in the crowd, a lot of the people in the crowd, who would have heard of him. He said, I was the one that persecuted the way. And he began to talk about the gospel then. It's like an intro. He referred to his Christian faith as the way. The true way of God, the way within Judaism. His reference to his days as a persecutor set the stage for the total miracle that God did in his life to move him from there to being one who talks about the Messiah and that he's a fulfillment for Judaism, a miracle. You know, if you're saved, you had a miracle. I don't mean, well, because I wasn't a drug addict, it was not a miracle. Nope. If you're saved, it's a miracle. You know, what happens too many times when people have that, they give way too much credit to the devil and all their testimony. They spend all their time just talking about all the bad stuff they were instead of spending on, oh, I was a bad guy, but God changed me. Paul didn't spend a lot of his time there. He said, this is what I did. And then he starts to talk about the miracle because he sets it up and he says, I was that way. This is what I was doing. But he turned me around. He turned to the miracle, his encounter with Christ on the Damascus Road. The encounter on Damascus Road. One of the unique emphasis of Paul's conversion is he talks about the light. What? It's that noonday sun. When is the sun the brightest? Then. He said this light was so much brighter that it blinded him, literally. It blinded him. It was a miracle. He's using that as, that's what he's using. He was blinded by a bright light. So brilliant as the sun. In the Old Testament especially, light is often associated with an epiphany of God, how he's making something known. Do you think that's by chance that Paul put that in there? He knows all that. He knows exactly the way Jewish people think. He's a scholar himself. He wanted his Jewish audience to realize that he really did have a divine encounter with God, like Moses at the burning bush. You know, whenever you see who you are, you know, that's what C.S. Lewis said. He said, you know, I saw myself as I really was. He says, and I gave in. He said, I admitted that God was God. That's a miracle. That's a miracle. That's it. On the Damascus Road, the reason why the persecutor had become the preacher was because of what Jesus did. That's it. That's the miracle. Please don't ever say, well, I don't really have a testimony. If you're saved, you do. You don't have to come out of some crazy messed up system all of your life and then all of a sudden you're saved and now you have something to. Don't think you can't share something if you didn't have all that. You ought to thank God that you don't have all that. A lot of times we put people down who don't have all that flashy stuff going on. Boy, it's a miracle that you didn't have to go through all that in your life. Count it a blessing. The role of Ananias. And one Ananias, a devout man, he says, according to the law, well reported by all the Jews, that came unto me and standing by me said, brother Saul, receive thy sight. When all this happened, Ananias, whom they would respect as a Jew, came and he said, he's the one who got me through this. Now, Paul is wise. He didn't say in that testimony there that Ananias was already converted. But he was. He just said he was a devout Jew. And so they would expect he's given credence to what he's saying. That the God of our fathers had pointed thee to his will and to see the righteous one and the voice. Those words absolutely came straight out of the Old Testament, things that they revered. He had treated Ananias in a unique way, how he was a loyal, devout Jew and showed how an observer of the Torah and well respected by all the people there. And he wrote the words Paul were steeped in the language of this, these things alone. Paul knew the Jewish crowd could associate with what he's saying. They said, wait a minute, all these things are happening to show he really is a devout Jew, that he really is not against the Jewish people. His commission in the temple, the Jews charged him with violating that. Listen to what he said. He responded by referring to the vision that he had had in the temple sometime back. Then it came to pass that when I had returned to Jerusalem and while I prayed in the temple, I fell in a trance. And saw him saying unto me, make haste and get thee quickly out of Jerusalem, because they will not receive thy testimony concerning me. And he said unto me, depart, for I will send thee forth hence unto the Gentiles. He's telling them, I was in the temple and I was praying. In the Old Testament, that was a big deal. When you had a vision in the temple and God's telling you something. All that's Old Testament stuff. All that is Jewish to the bone. And they gave audience unto him. And they lifted up their voice and said, when he said the word Gentile, that was it. You know, it would be kind of like somebody our day and time, and it still goes on, even as ecumenical as we all claim we are. You're talking with a certain group, and if they learn you're Baptist, they automatically cut you off. Isn't that right? Or if you're in Baptist circles and you're of somebody else and you say, well, I'm this, then they automatically cut you off. Same thing. When he said the word Gentile, they said, nope. And what happened? They were so upset. It looked like a bunch of bulls out there in the pasture. That's what it said, right? They threw off their coats and they kicked up the dust. Can you imagine? Isn't that what you see bulls do out there and the cows do out there when they're mad? I hope you've never had that happen. I've had it happen when I was in the field with them. And you need to get toward a fence somewhere. That's exactly what happened. And said, away with such a fellow from the earth. Kill him. We need to kill him. So they're about to start another stampede. The Jews in the temple yard accused him of taking the Gentile in, and that's the thing. The mention of the Gentiles was more than they could handle. Wait a minute. We had you up there. You said God told you to go to the Gentiles. You know what that is? They thought they were better. They were God's chosen people. They don't deserve to be saved like us. They're all Gentiles. That's what was going on. Nationalism to the max. They didn't want to hear it. One word too many, Gentile. The Jewish crowds raised their voices, drowning Paul out and curtailing his speech. When Paul claimed that God sent him out of Jerusalem to proclaim a divine message about the Gentiles, it was more than they could handle. And as they cried out and they threw off their garments and they cast dust in the air, and the chief captain commanded that he be brought, this guy's about to get in trouble. He said, wait a minute, what is going on? Biting that he should be examined by scourging. You know what that is, right? Same thing that happened to Jesus. It has several different names, but it's whenever they seriously, they don't play good cop, bad cop. When they wanted to find out something, they went straight to the issue. They pulled your clothes off and started beating you with a flagellum, and it either had pieces of metal or bone in it, and they would hit you back with it till you told them the truth. They didn't want none of this standing around. You know, pretty quick, they'd get it out of you. That's what that was. So that's what he's talking about, by scourging. That he might know for sure, why are these people hating this guy? So we need to get to it. He was in Roman custody for the remainder of the whole thing of Acts. That's what we see throughout the rest of the book. Confined by the Romans, his adversaries were the Jews. Even though he was imprisoned by Rome, the people that hate him were the Jews. The rest of his life, Jesus the same way. The Jewish mob resumed its cry to do away with him, kill him. That's what that meant. You know, it wasn't when it says away with him. Lysias still did not have the answer. He said, what are we going to do about this? So we got to find out why is this going on. So he prepared what was for the Romans, this flogging, the scourging. So he got him ready. And then whenever they're already tying him up. I mean, they're already putting his hands down and getting ready to beat him. And this is what Paul says. And when they had tied him up, Paul said unto the centurion that stood by, is it lawful for you to scourge a man that's a Roman and he hasn't even been to trial yet? Can you do that? Whoa. No, you can't do that. Centurion immediately stopped the process and says, uh-oh, man, we just stepped out there too quick. And then he informed Lysias, the guy we looked at last week, who was the commander over 1,000, centurions over 100. He goes to him and said, we got a problem. What are we going to do about it? And he told him that Paul is a Roman citizen. You know, and it goes on between the commander and says, wait a minute, you're a Roman citizen? He said, you know, and he goes on to tell him, you know, the Roman soldier saying, you know, I bought my Roman citizenship and it cost a lot. And Paul said, I didn't have to buy it. I was born that way. And he goes back and forth with him in the dialogue there. When you go back and you read the whole thing, that's exactly what he said. He probably derived his name Claudius, they say, because he bought it while Claudius was the emperor, and it cost a lot. So they had already committed a crime by, number one, placing a Roman citizen in chains. That's the first mistake. To scourge him without ever having a charge is not good, all right? But that's what's happening. What he had been guilty of? He found himself in mind. So you know what he says? I'll just pass this off somewhere else. And then what happens? Nobody wants to take responsibility. Ain't it right? Well, it ain't my fault. It ain't my fault. Nobody takes responsibility of anything anymore. He could always argue that, well, you know, we just took him in and put him in chains because we were trying to protect him. You know, this crowd's about to kill him, so we did this just to protect him. Not. But you could see how he might could get away with that if somebody pushed him on it. But who was he? That's the question. Why are these people wanting to kill him? We need to know. The next morning he ordered a meeting of the Sanhedrin. Surely all these Jews and the Sanhedrin, all these judges, they can figure out what the deal is. So I'm going to pass that on and let them figure it out. Basically, that's where we pick it up next time. He said, I'm not going to deal with it. That's a Jewish thing. That's like one of those guys last night, one of those nut preachers. Oh, well, Jesus really never dealt with these moral issues. Hello. What Bible are you reading? Literally said that. They interviewed him on, like, The View or something. Number one, you've got to be crazy to go on that show anyway. You already being attacked, and he gets, oh, we don't really deal. Jesus never dealt with that, so we don't try to deal with that. And even Meredith looked around and said, did he say that? It's crazy. That's what goes on. If he's such a devout Jew, surely these people can figure it out, and we'll see when he goes before them next week. But here's the question. Who do you live for? What is your testimony? That's it. That's what Paul is saying. This is what I'm about. What Jesus did in my life. What is our testimony? What does it say? What does it show? People live to proclaim the gospel to the Gentile. I mean, Paul lived. He said, that's what I'm about. When Christ saved me, that's all my whole mindset. That's all I'm about, to share the gospel. Many people live for themselves. Boy, isn't that true? Their world's about them. That's it. Still that way. Worse than ever in my lifetime. Greed is still a popular motivator in our day. Why do you want that? When you get that, what are you going to do with it? You know, is it important how fast you get there, or what do you do when you get there? Isn't that really what the deal is? You know, like the guy said, I know I'm going the wrong way, but I hate to turn around and making such a good time. Who cares how quick you get there? The thing is, what are you going to do when you get there? When you get your degree, what are you going to do with it? When you get that job, what are you going to do with it? What's the purpose for it? Just to make money? Many live for family. Family is their God. In the name of Jesus. Oh, they put their family over God all the time. All the time. Some live and even die for the church. People do that. Don't have a clue. I don't even think they're saved, but they're so religious. It's all about church. And a lot of times they get that wrong. But there are still some modern Christians who live for Christ. That's what Paul said. Look at this prayer based on Psalm 19. I don't know who wrote it. It's anonymous. Oh, God, I want very much to please you. Boy, that's a big start. To walk in your ways and carry out your purposes. What's God's purpose for you? He has a purpose for you, all of us. What is it? There's nothing as important to me as being in the center of your will. Wow. Now, that's a kicker. Can you be in the center of the will working where you work? Can you be in the center of his will in the relationship that you're in? Can you be in the center of his will doing whatever you're doing? They said, that's what I want to do. And living within your design for my life. Not only have you fashioned me with your hands, O Lord, and created me for your purposes, but you have stamped your image on my heart. Therefore, my deepest longings are met only in you. Not in a person, not in a job, not in a bank account. You. You. And in the dedication of my life to the accomplishment of your objectives. God, what do you want to do with me and in me for your purpose? That's it. What is our testimony? Paul laid it out. He said, my purpose was to get the gospel to the Gentiles. It's going to cost him a lot. We'll pick up the rest of his defenses as we go through the rest of the book of Acts. Let's pray. Lord, thank you that you love us. Lord, help us be honest. If we were to sit down and write out our testimony today, can we really write down that you've changed our life? That we've had an encounter with you that really changed us, and our whole objective in this life is not what it used to be, that our whole purpose in this life is not what it used to be. It's not centered around just me and ourselves and what we can accumulate, but to fulfill the purpose you have for us. Help us be honest. convict us, change us, so that you'll be glorified, and so that the gospel can be taken to the people who need it. In Jesus' name, amen.